You're listening to Textcast Norway, the English language version of the Norwegian podcast Pengelam. In this episode, we talk to Francis Kairo of Tax Justice Network Africa about the Pandora Papers and the revelations about Kenya's president Uhuru Kenyatta. Francis joined us in Oslo over Zoom from Nairobi, where he works. Hi, Francis. Can you hear us?
Hello, Peter. How are you?
I am very good. How are you?
I am well.
Very glad to hear that. How is the weather in where are you now? In Nairobi or?
Yes, I am in Nairobi, Kenya. They call it the city in the sun.
Oh.
But not too much sun today.
Okay.
It's raining. It's rainy season.
Okay. Probably warmer than here still. It's like 12 minus 12 degrees Celsius and snow and ice in Oslo.
Oh, this should be summer weather in Oslo, yeah. Because though rainy, it's warm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us in our podcast. We are really looking forward to the conversation with you. Can you just start off by introducing yourself a little bit to our listeners?
Yeah, my name is Francis Kairo. I am a Kenyan. I have trained as a lawyer with a bachelor's degree as well as a master's degree from the University of Washington in the US.
Hmm.
Currently, working with Tax Justice Network Africa. And I am a policy officer, and I focus on tax and the international financial architecture. I am a father as well to two beautiful daughters.
Oh, me as well. So you're a very busy man then.
Yes, it's a full-time job, just taking care of three beautiful ladies.
Yeah.
That's the daughters and the mom.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I live in Nairobi, I also, because of working a lot on tax, I have had a background on anti-corruption as well, and therefore a lot of the things that I speak about today, I speak about them because of the background I have had, working on anti-corruption as well as financial and economic crimes.
All right. Seems like you have the perfect background to talk about what we are going to talk about today. Can you just, for our listeners, also say a little bit about Tax Justice Network Africa and the work that you do?
Yeah. Tax Justice Network Africa is a network of several organizations that work on illicit financial flows across Africa. And therefore, Tax Justice Network Africa, as it is actually acting as the secretariat of several organizations several countries across Africa. And we have a Pan-African focus, and therefore any issues related to the continent on matters of illicit financial flows and tax, that is tax justice, are the areas that we focus on. Currently, Tax Justice Network is based in Nairobi, Kenya. But because of the breadth of our work, we work in about 10 countries across Africa. The team as well at Tax Justice Network Africa, or TJNA, is also a Pan-African team. And therefore, we have our team is drawn from across Africa, whether it's Francophone Africa, Anglophone Africa, and currently also we have expanded to Lusophone Africa, and therefore covering countries that speak Portuguese, countries that speak English, countries that also speak French. In addition to that, our focus areas currently are tax and the international financial architecture, and therefore looking at the influence that the global financial architecture has on tax issues across Africa. And this is the a program that I focus on. We also focus on tax and investments, therefore looking at things like double taxation agreement, international financial centers, and how they influence tax justice. We also focus on the natural resource governance, and therefore looking at how tax plays out in the governance of natural resources like oil, natural gas, and all that. And also another focus area being tax and inequality. So looking at how tax can be used to foster more equality across African nations.
That's very impressive, and I believe it's the most substantial network that we have in the tax justice family, the strongest organization amongst the regional tax justice networks. We call you up today because Kenya is one of the sort of countries that have been mentioned in regards to the Pandora Papers, and we will talk a little bit about Pandora Papers very soon. But first, I think many of our listeners need a little bit of knowledge about Kenya and the political system in Kenya in order to understand the situation there. So can you give a very brief introduction to how Kenya is governed and about the current president, Uhuru Kenyatta?
Yeah, maybe I should start off by talking about how beautiful the country is.
Definitely.
The landscapes are beautiful. The people are also very welcoming. We've had a huge tradition of having lots of people from across Africa and across the globe who, apart from visiting the country, are also currently calling Kenya their second home. And there are also some who have come and have been unable to leave because they are enchanted by our beauty. In addition to that, in terms of the political system, we are a growing democracy. That means that we have some areas that we can say we are proud of, like a new constitution that is in about its 10th year, which really overhauled the entire system. Whether it's the public finance system, whether it's the political system, whether it's the governance system, we have a new constitution and are therefore a growing democracy. We do not rank so well when it comes to the other indicators, for example, the Corruption Perceptions Index that is well respected on matters of corruption, whether it's the Human Development Index, the HDI. But in terms of regional power, Kenya is a regional power economically and politically as well. And we therefore have been at the forefront of assisting our neighbors to stabilize their nations, but also foster peace in those countries. Economically, we are a regional hub, and therefore, because of the strength of the Kenyan shilling, because of having a strong and vibrant economy, we are a partner to be relied on by our neighbors. In addition to that, the current president, Uhuru Kenyatta, he has the advantage of bearing, the name of Kenya
right.
in his name.
Yeah. Not many presidents have that strength. That it's not President Joe America of America, for instance.
or Joe Norwegian.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is actually almost impossible to have word on the street is that you cannot get a national identity card with his name. It is well protected.
Yeah.
And so the government does not really allow people to bear this name that easily. Because Uhuru Kenyatta is the son of is one of the sons of the founding president, who became the first black president of Kenya immediately after independence.
Right.
We gained independence around 1963, And the senior Kenyatta was, or we call him the older Kenyatta, because they both bear the same names. He was the first president, and the son now has been president for the last 9 years. He's currently serving his second term, and under our constitution, he can only serve for 2 terms.
Mm.
And therefore, we will have elections next year in August, and he will definitely have come to the end of his term.
Okay.
And we, under our law, he will not be running again. So that is Uhuru Kenyatta for you. Mm. He's the youngest son in that family, but I think the most powerful currently because of the position that he holds. As I finish that section, I think it is fair to say that he is a powerful man with deep connections internally and externally, that is outside the country.
Yeah. If we turn to the Pandora Papers, among the countries whose leaders were exposed in the Pandora Papers were the King of Jordan, the presidents of Ukraine and Ecuador, the Prime Minister of the Czech Republic, even former British Prime Minister Tony Blair. But in addition, it contained information on Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta, that you briefly introduced us to, and his family. Can you say a little bit about what it was that the Pandora Papers exposed about the president family?
Yeah, just a little addition to the power that the Kenyatta family holds in the country.
Yeah, please.
The older Kenyatta was in government for only 15 years. He passed on in the year 1978, but it is telling that 43 years later, after his death, his family remains the most powerful. It remains the wealthiest family in the country.
Yeah.
And by all standards, maybe across the continent, they would rank as among the wealthiest and the most connected families on the continent.
Mm.
They control the banking sector. They have interest in the insurance sector. They have business interests in the telecom sector, which is big and growing.
Yeah.
They are wealthy, land wealthy. I think they are the wealthiest family in the country when it comes to the amount of land they hold, which is also in very strategic places, in strategic towns and near Nairobi. And we can say that in terms of wealth, they are wealthy. And it is telling that 43 years later, after the older Kenyatta passed on, this family's wealth has continued growing. Their land has continued increasing. What happened is that with the Pandora Papers, finally, we can now say that at least we know that they have wealth in the country, but they have also stashed wealth out of the country.
Right.
And I think if you look at the history of wealth being stashed out of, you know, Africa, you will see that it is the dictators like Mobutu Sese Seko who started off by stashing wealth out of their country with the notion that in case anything happens locally, they have a fallback plan.
Right.
Yeah. The Pandora Papers reveal that at least Uhuru, the president, and his family hold offshore accounts worth at least Kenya shillings 3.3 billion, which is about $300 million.
Okay, wow.
It's held through multiple layers of entities, at least 3 layers to try and shield it. In fact, the law firm, one of the law firms that was involved in registering a foundation, calls them by numbers. So they are client number 13713.
Mm.
In addition to that, it is important to note that apart from all this wealth that is said to be held offshore, the way that it is held is through a foundation.
Yeah.
And a foundation is a legal entity has several advantages to it. It can hide the owners. It can hide the value. It can also hide the assets that the foundation holds. So I would say that what we know now is actually like a scratch of the surface in terms of the wealth, the value, and the assets.
And how much of these revelations were already known to the Tax Justice Network Africa, and, or at least very much suspected, and how much was sort of surprising to you?
It was a shocker to everyone.
Okay.
Much more so those that may not have interacted with this information before. But those within tax justice and those that have been focusing on financial and economic crime like Tax Justice Network Africa, this was just a confirmation of what we have been saying all through, that indeed wealth is leaving the continent, wealth is leaving the country, and wealth that is being stashed out there could have been derived legally or illegally. And therefore, this was just a confirmation that our fears and what we have been saying is real, that indeed we have illicit financial flows and the money is going to tax havens. And therefore, when we see the Panama connection, when we see the connection to a tax haven, it's just a confirmation of the things we have been speaking about. So a bit shocking, but a good thing for us, because at least now there is evidence that does not come from us, who may not be very liked, but it comes from a confirmed and reliable source.
And can I ask you, does it also contain information on what the Kenyatta family has invested in through these tax havens? Do they invest back into Kenya and to the economy in Africa? Or is it more into like luxury goods and apartments and this sort of stuff? Is there any information on that?
Yeah. So in terms of their local investments are well known. Banking sector, telecoms. But we did not know how they were investing this money out of the country. And therefore, being able to see that there is indeed a foundation that is being used to, you know, hold the wealth. I think it's a clearer revelation that indeed they are investing out of the country. And I think there's space to continue seeing the apartments that they are holding, the luxury boats that they may be holding. I think there's space to continue seeing that. But currently as it is, what we know is that there are foundations, there are offshore accounts, there are also offshore entities that are being used to hold and hide this wealth.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I want to ask you a little bit about how was this story received in Kenya? Because as you mentioned, the president's family has extreme amounts of power. And as you have now explained, not only political power, but also economic power. How did the main media sources in Kenya cover this story?
Peter, this is where the problems begin.
Oh, okay.
Because who owns the media, the main media stations in the country? The main ones are owned by powerful businessmen who are very well linked to the politicians in the country for strategic reasons, because as a growing democracy, it is easy for the government to walk into any media station, lock it down, interfere with their frequency, or even deny them the frequencies for them to be operating across the country.
Right.
And this informs how certain information that is said or can be said to be politically sensitive is received and aired. And therefore, the few print media that we have in the country, we cannot say they're independent. Their biggest contracts come from government, and therefore ruffling feathers within government is not seen as a good strategic business move. We had several interviews on mainstream TV. I actually attended one, but the way it was scripted is that I attended it alongside a politician who we can say was an apologist for the government.
Yeah.
And therefore, the few opportunities that there were to highlight the main issues, the ethical questions, were watered down by inviting politicians who were simply apologists for the government. Mm. In addition to that, it is important to highlight that social media within the country is very powerful. And therefore, we have a lot of Kenyans who speak about topical issues on social media without caring or without the restrictions that could come from government. And therefore, this issue trended on social media, more so on Twitter and Facebook. But how did the government react? They ran a parallel misinformation operation that, using other fake accounts or accounts that were created simply for purposes of driving misinformation to cover the names of the Kenyattas. This was very unfortunate. It has been highlighted across in several independent media stations that this misinformation drive was simply run because the Kenyans on social media had run away with the information and they were asking the right questions. They were asking questions, for example, about why we are saying it is legal to do that, but ethically it is wrong for somebody to, to be stashing the wealth out there.
Mm.
So I would say that the reaction was very watered down because of those political considerations.
And you mentioned social media, but do people in Kenya have access to independent media sources from outside Kenya that is covering Kenya? I know a lot of countries have, sort of expatriate media sources, if to call it that, like media sources that are organized from outside of the country, but have an audience inside of Kenya. Is it something like that in Kenya as well, or do you have independent media sources from inside Kenya?
Yeah. So the main issue there is that for us to access these independent media stations, you would need an internet connection, which is not very common, or you would need to pay for expensive cable TV for you to be able to access these independent media stations. And therefore, the average Kenyan only has access to the local media stations, which, as I said, are controlled by the elite.
Yeah.
Are controlled by the powerful within government, and therefore the level of information that the ordinary Kenyan can access is that information which they will be fed by mainstream media. Of course, there are those that are able to access independent and international media, but that is just a small segment of society, and we can say that those are the people who live, for example, within the city, and they would be the middle class, but this does not represent the common Kenyan that you find on the street.
Has there been an official response from the president about the revelations?
Oh, he was very tactical about it, because these revelations came during a time when he was touring the U.S. So I think the environment as well demanded of him to be very tactical about how he was going to respond. So his first words were that such reports will go a long way in enhancing financial transparency and openness. This is what he said while in the US.
Okay.
And I think he was preparing to address a UN meeting. So his first response was, this is a good report.
Mm-hmm.
It is required for us to be able to enhance financial transparency and openness in Kenya and around the globe. He also promised that immediately he landed back in Kenya, he was going to give a comprehensive statement.
Okay.
That was in October. I think early October. We are now heading towards the end of the year.
Yeah.
He has not responded substantively. He has not bothered to answer any of the main questions as to how much, the why, and what plans are there to bring some of this wealth back to the country. So one of the things that he has also said is that his name, his personal name, is not there. But the truth is, if you look at the evidence, it says to the contrary. His name is actually written. His three names are actually included in one of the documents that was leaked in relation to him and his mother.
Mm.
And therefore, there's no denying this. So he started by saying it's a good thing. Then when he came back, he said, my personal name is not there. This is a family issue. But then it has all gone quiet. He's no longer responding to such inquiries.
And is there any sort of like public, you've sort of mentioned already, but has there been like public outrage, or are people upset about this, or is it, have they succeeded in mostly smoothing over this story from the president's media strategy?
Yeah, comparing the Pandora Papers with the experiences we've had before, for example, with the Panama Papers, and other similar or leaks with similar international attention. This was the first time that Kenyans were interacting with information that indeed there is an offshore world that favors the rich, that favors the well-connected, and there was huge public outrage. In fact, we had more outrage from the citizens who know very little about how these systems work than from the politicians, than from government agencies that are tasked with following and checking some of these issues. And therefore, word on the streets was the why. Why is the head of government, why is the richest family not investing in industrializing our country, but hiding their wealth out there?
Mm.
In fact, there was a huge trend with the hashtag client number 13173, people asking, why is the head of government hiding his wealth out there? But as I mentioned, it was quickly watered down through a parallel misinformation drive, which was obviously sponsored by those that were mentioned. I would say that, unfortunately, because of the way things work in the country, the fire has went down very quickly. So it was lit very to a huge extent, and then it started dying down, and now people are preoccupied by other things.
Right.
However, I think I will speak about the reaction from TJNA and others about how the need to keep the fire going.
Yeah, because what was your main reaction, and what was your sort of, what did you ask for in reaction to this story?
Yeah, so our response number one was we were on mainstream media saying that the right questions need to be asked. And one of the things we were saying is that Kenyans invest, Kenyans also have offshore accounts, but they are not held through complicated corporate structures. They are not held in tax havens. They are not held in places where it is almost impossible to get more information unless it is leaked the way it was leaked this way.
Mm.
And therefore, our first reaction was to try and counter the deliberate effort that was there to reduce this conversation to a conversation of, if it is legal, it is not wrong. If it is legal for the president to work with a lawyer and the president's family to open an account in a country, if it is not illegal, then there is no problem with that. Our first response was, is it ethical for the head of government, for the head or for one of the sons of the wealthiest families in the country to speak about developing our nation, but on the other hand, to be hiding wealth in another country? Yeah, in addition to that, our reaction was, all along, every year, we release a state of tax justice report across the globe. And every year we have been saying that multinational corporations and wealthy individuals are responsible for corporate tax abuse that is moving billions out of developing countries to tax havens and developed nations. And therefore, our reaction is, number one, to say that indeed this is a confirmation that where we have been saying that corporate tax abuse is a major contributor to illicit financial flows, now there is evidence.
Mm.
Now there is evidence that wealthy individuals and wealthy businessmen are involved in the movement of wealth, whether derived legally or illegally, out of the country. In addition to that, one of the things that TJNA has said is that not every Kenyan, not every ordinary African has the necessary connections to the people that assist the wealthy and the powerful to establish these corporate, complicated corporate structures for them to hide this wealth. And therefore, we are calling for more accountability for those in positions of power, for those in positions of influence, for those that are wealthy. And our accountability demand is we need to know how much wealth, what is the value, and how many people are involved in all this. In addition to that, we have released several explainers trying to ensure that citizens understand that, for example, if we look at last year, 2020, our State of Tax Justice report says that at least $558 billion were lost to tax abuse. And the way that tax abuse happens is through the use of these corporate structures as the ones that were used by the Kenyattas or are currently being used by the Kenyattas to move and to hide their wealth. And therefore, our reaction has also been calling for more beneficial ownership transparency, not just locally, but also in the tax havens that are being exploited by the wealthy and the powerful to hide and to conceal their wealth.
Well, that seems like a lot of good ideas to move forward. I see that we already spent more of your time than we asked for. But I just wanted to quickly ask you before we round up how this story has impacted your work in TJN Africa in any way.
Yeah, our focus moving forward we'll be focusing on promoting beneficial ownership transparency across Africa. And this is a direct response to the use of these complicated corporate structures to hide and to move wealth out of the continent. And therefore, the Pandora Papers has actually come in to at least solidify our thoughts that indeed beneficial ownership transparency remains a key concern and a key consideration for our work moving forward. In addition to that, we will focus more as Tax Justice Network in trying to unpack this information for the ordinary citizens, because some of these conversations around tax transparency or tax justice have been made too technical that indeed our citizens are unable to relate to that information. And therefore, moving forward, we will focus on unpacking this information, ensuring that ordinary citizens can understand what complicated corporate structures are and why they are being exploited by the rich, the wealthy, and the powerful. In addition to that, having seen that transparency continues to be a major concern, we will continue demanding for more transparency and more accountability for those that are wealthy, for those that are powerful, and for those that are holding positions of power in our countries. And therefore, as a movement, these will continue being priority areas for us. And we hope to be doing even more of this across Africa, and more specifically in the countries that we are currently working on, while expanding to more countries across Africa.
It's very impressive, the work you do there. It's an inspiration for the whole tax justice network or the tax justice movement, I would say.
Yeah, we will continue working even more. We feel that Parliament also has a responsibility to demand for accountability from the executive, and therefore building more capacity within parliamentarians within Africa will continue being a major focus area for us. To ensure that the questions that we ask do not resonate only with us, but they also resonate with those that are able to ask these questions in Parliament.
Definitely. Well, thank you again for taking time to speak with us. I assume you now have to go back to work, or at least maybe to follow up of your two girls and the family you have back home. So,
I'm heading into a meeting where we will be launching a report that looks at the state of tax justice in Angola, which is one of those countries that was also mentioned in the Pandora Papers. Of course, another powerful family, the Dos Santos. We will be releasing a research there this afternoon.
Wow.
And therefore, the work continues.
It's interestingly one of the largest business partners of Norway outside of, at least outside of Europe, but I think in the world.
Yeah.
Because we have large oil companies who are very much present in Angola. So that will be also very interesting for us to learn more about the work you do on Angola. I will look forward to that. Okay, thanks. Thanks again, Kairu, and take care.
Thank you. Thank you, Peter and Chris. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too.
Okay, bye.
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 This was an interview made for the Norwegian language podcast Pengeland, made available for an English-speaking audience. Pengeland is made possible with support from Norad and the TaxCap Dev Network. In studio was me, your host, Peter Ringstad, and our producer, Christopher Lislegård. Mixing and music by Christopher Lislegård.